Well, we're taking a little break here this morning from the series on This Is Church that we've been doing, and do something a little bit different, kind of standalone this morning, and then we're going to come back and hopefully finish that series then next Sunday. So today, I want to take a look at a psalm, Psalm 27 in particular, and so if you have a Bible, I want to invite you to turn there or pull that up on your phone. Psalm 27, this is one of the psalms of David, and I don't know if you know this, but not all the psalms are actually written by him that we have in the Old Testament. And it's 14 verses long. And this is a psalm that deals a lot with the topic of fear. So I want to just start by reading, just to kind of get us warmed up here, the first verse out loud together. So we're going to read this, Psalm 27, verse 1. You guys ready to read this with me? Okay, don't leave me hanging, please. Okay, here we go. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Not bad. Whom shall I fear? Of whom shall I be afraid? You guys probably know this, but very few things mess with and kind of distort our perspective like fear when that shows up in our lives. And I think we have fear for different reasons. Sometimes it's moments when life feels out of control. It's the moment when, you know, the loss of a job creates a financial crisis that you weren't expecting, and there's fear. It's a health scare. It's something that happens to someone that we love. There's fear often. A marriage or a close relationship is ending, and suddenly you have all these new unknowns in your life, and with that, fear many times. So sometimes it's moments when we feel like life's out of control. Other times it's when we feel like we're facing maybe a potential loss in our lives. Like we've got to let go of something or someone, and that's really scary. We've got to let go of a relationship, and then there's fear, or you got to give up on a job or a dream or something about our future, and there's fear. And I think the reason that there's fear, and we all relate to this, is because we can't see into the future. There's all these things that are unknown. And so what happens is we end up focusing on that, on the unknown. We end up kind of zeroing in on the emotions that come with that, that we don't know what's going to happen, and all the negative things, and we exaggerate the what-ifs and the details. And so fear, when it happens, it causes us to lose basically our objectivity, and it distorts our perspective. And I think the reason this is really important to talk about is because how we respond in these moments can actually change the course of our life. When we are tempted to focus on fear and all the things that come with that, it can actually alter the course of our lives. I mean, I know people who, because of fear and fear of the unknown and fear of perhaps having to give something up they don't want to give up, they've actually walked away from God because of that. Not like all at one time. It wasn't like Tuesday at, 7 p.m. But in that process, ended up moving away from God. And maybe you've had a time in your life like that where it's like, you ever had a time like that where it's like God's telling me to go right and I don't want to go right because right, like that way is unknown and it's scary, and so I'm going to keep doing my own thing because I may never get that opportunity again. Right? She may never come along, a person like her, a guy like him. I may never get a group of friends like this. And so we kind of go with what we want. And some of you would say, yeah, that's kind of when I parted ways at some point in my life with God. Like I knew at the time I wasn't doing the right thing, but I was afraid. If I let the opportunity, if I let the relationship or whatever it was slip away. And so here's the question I want us to wrestle with and hopefully try to answer at some level this morning is, what are we supposed to do in these moments? I'm talking about when you get the call, when you get the results back from the doctor, when your boss looks at you and she has that look on her face. What do we do in these moments? The fear of abandonment, insecurity, whatever it is that causes each one of us to be afraid. Because here's the thing. No matter what our situations are, all of us, we all, as followers of Jesus, we're going to face these crossroads moments. At one point or another, and probably more than once, when you have to decide, am I going to do what God wants me to do, or am I going to go with my fear? Am I going to try to keep things predictable and safe and try to basically keep things the same? So David begins Psalm 27, verse 1, by saying, "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid?" In a lot of ways, this is kind of nice because he gives us his conclusion, like his main point. He actually says it up front. But if you do a quick study of David's life, you find that there are all kinds of reasons that he actually did have to have real fear, to actually be afraid. Of course, you think of David going up against Goliath, you know, big guy. David was a little guy at the time. And so reasons to be scared there. Later in David's life, you have him running from King Saul, and Saul was the kind of guy who usually got what he wanted. And in this case, he wanted David dead. And so that was a real reason for David to be afraid. Later in David's life, you have all these seemingly impossible military situations. David's faced with impossible odds. And so I just want to mention that before we read the rest of this, in case you're tempted to write David's perspective off. Like, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He doesn't know what, like, real fear. No, he has some significant reasons and experiences of anxiety, moments of his life when literally his future hung in the balance. So here's what he says in verse 2. He says, "When the wicked advance against me to devour me, it is my enemies and my foes who will stumble and fall. Though an army besiege me," and besiege means basically to completely surround, as in there's no way out. "Though an army besiege me, my heart will not fear. Though war break out against me, even then I will be confident." And one of the things just reading this that stands out to me is the pronoun. Did you see that David uses? "When the wicked advance against," not us, but me, "though an army besiege me personally, though war break out against," not us collectively, "though war break out against me personally." David's saying, I'm facing absolutely overwhelming circumstances. I'm surrounded, there's an army, there's no way out, and I'm besieged by my problems. And you skip down, he kind of goes on in verse 10 even, he says, "Though my father and mother forsake me, the Lord will receive me." And I don't know exactly what he's talking about there, but you know, if you think about that poetically, for some of us, you know, some of the most difficult fears and anxieties and struggles that we have, it's around our family, isn't it? Around stuff that we're dealing with in those relational dynamics, tensions with siblings, stuff with, you know, marriage, dating, issues with our kids. "Though my father and mother forsake me, the Lord will receive me." Verse 11, "Teach me your way, Lord. Lead me in a straight path because of my oppressors. Do not turn me over to the desires of my foes. For false witnesses rise up against me, spouting malicious accusations." You ever been in a situation or a conflict where people are just spreading all kinds of lies about you? They're saying things about what you said and what you did that are simply not true. And what do? You start to fear, you start to worry about your reputation. You start to fear the implications of these mistruths that are being spread around about you. And your stomach has that, like, it's in knots with the injustice of it. So these are just some of the experiences that David is sharing, some of the scenarios. Now for us, here's the problem with fear. It generally, and if we're not careful, causes us to do one of two different things. It generates usually one of these two reactions. It either results typically in panic decisions, or depending on our personality, maybe depending on the situation, paralysis. What do you do when you are afraid? Think about that. What's your natural reaction? Some of us, we go into panic mode, don't we? Like, I got to fix this. I got to make this go away. And we start sending emails and we start writing checks and we're doing all kinds of things. We are in motion. Even if it's not going to help, we've got to do something to fix it. It's the person in a terrible financial situation overreacting in that moment and actually making it worse. You know what I mean? In an attempt to fix one mess, made a much bigger mess. There's something in some of us that says, I got to do something to stop whatever this is from happening. And some of us in this room, we could stand up here and we could say, some of our biggest regrets were when we were afraid of the unknown, afraid of having to give something up, and we reacted out of fear, and we made a mess. And we look back and we go, what was I thinking? I complicated my life more. I lost perspective because I was driven by fear. Others of you in this room, that's not your problem. What we do is we freeze up, don't we? Just kind of, we just freeze up. And you pretend like nothing's wrong. And your friends are like, hey, how's it going? And you're like, fine. And they're like, you're not acting right. You're not being yourself. I mean, what's going on? An example of this would be if you're in a relationship that you know is not good. And you know God probably wants you to get out of this relationship. And so you know it, and your friends are saying you should probably get out of that. But you're afraid because you know what life is like in this relationship. And what you don't know is if you get out of it, what's going to happen? And what life is going to be like then? And is this like the only train leaving the station or not? And so instinctively you stay in. Or some of you, you know what this is like because you're in a job or you've been in a job and you know, you've sensed God leading you to take a risk, to do something different. And you're like, yeah, but this is what I know. And I'm comfortable here. And to step out means stepping out into all kinds of uncertainty. And that's scary. And so some of us were frozen by fear. And so my question is, how does David avoid both of these extremes? Because what David doesn't do is he does not give in to the temptation to overreact, and he's got to fix, and he has to solve the problem himself. And then he also doesn't just kind of give up. He doesn't allow the fear to paralyze him emotionally. So here's what he says. In verse 3, he says, "The war break out against me. In spite of all of the reasons that I have to be scared out of my mind, even then," he says, "I will be confident. My heart will not fear." And so David, he lists all these really scary, like actually scary circumstances. And then at the same time, he seems to be strangely at peace, calm, composed even. And so I want to ask David, where did you get this confidence from? That's a good question, isn't it? The war break out against me. I'm good. I'm confident. I'm relaxed. I'm at peace. Like, I want that. And so we kind of move on. In verse 4, he actually gives us sort of his secret, I guess, although it's not really a secret. Verse 4, he says, "One thing I ask from the Lord, this only do I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze on the beauty of the Lord and to seek him in his temple. For in the day of trouble, he will keep me safe in his dwelling. He will hide me in the shelter of his sacred tent and set me high upon a rock." David says, there's one thing that I seek, this one thing. And then he breaks it down into three verbs. He says, to dwell, to gaze, and to seek. It's that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. And that's the house of the Lord, that's the temple. And he's not saying that he's going to like take his clothes and his futon and move and stay there forever. They did not actually let you do that. That wasn't really a choice that you had. And so he's talking about something else. He means this metaphorically in some other way. And I think what David is saying is that he wants to remain in God's presence. He wants to dwell on God's presence, to live with the continual awareness that God is with him. And so when he's tempted to panic, to freak out, to overreact, to shut down because his life or his future is threatened, what David would do is he would take all of that anxious energy and he would move it from powerlessness, he'd move it from that to worshiping the one who is powerful. So he'd worship. I'm going to worship God. I'm going to gaze on the beauty of the Lord. That means to fix my attention on who God is. David says he's going to seek the Lord. He seeks the Lord in his temple, which literally in this context means to get advice, to get counsel from God. Like, the one thing I want, David says, is to get God's, I want to know his will. I want to pursue his direction for my life. I want that to be my focus. And then he says in verse 6, then my head will be exalted above the enemies who surround me. At his sacred tent, I will sacrifice with shouts of joy. I will sing and make music to the Lord. Hear my voice when I call, Lord. Be merciful to me and answer me. My heart says of you, seek his face. Your face, Lord, I will seek. Now we get serious. The reason this is really important is because for many of us, when we are afraid, what I do is I'll turn my mouth to God, but where do I keep my focus? On me, on the situation, on the fact that I'm overwhelmed, on the fact this is killing me. Many of us, what we do is we have no problem praying, God, help. I don't know if you see what's going on here, but I could use a little intervention here. And of course, God's going, I had no idea. I had no clue that was happening in your life. Thank you for filling me in. So all of us, we pray when we're afraid, right? I mean, even if you're here and you're not sure about God, Jesus, Bible, church, you still, it's like, you know, whoever, wherever, up there, out there, somewhere, just in case, I'm going to offer up a prayer because I'm desperate. David says, I'm not going to just pray because, and I think that is important, but sometimes prayer, and we get in these cycles where we're just focused on us. David says it's more than that. I'm going to kind of go past my instinct to focus on me, and I'm going to turn not just my mouth, but my eyes, my gaze to the Lord, and I'm going to worship him. And David starts with, God, you are God, you are able, and you are the one who's in charge. And I just want you to know that's a conscious decision that you're probably not going to feel like making. It's an intent of your heart, of your focus. And so what David does is he models worship basically as a first response, his first response when he's tempted to be overwhelmed, paralyzed, whatever, by fear. And again, we're not going to feel like doing that in these moments. But here's why this is important. Worship, when you focus on God, you turn to him, what it actually does is it puts your fears in context. When you're focused on God and the fact that he is powerful, that he is good, that God is great, when you focus on all these things, what begins to happen is you begin to see your fears against that larger backdrop. And what before was this great big, I can't take it, this is keeping me awake at night fear, in the context of who God is, and remembering his faithfulness and his goodness, the fear, it begins to change, doesn't it? You actually begin to see it from a different perspective. And that's before the circumstances ever change, and they may never change. Before any armies are defeated, the simple act of focusing on him and not the problem, it reframes and gives us perspective on our situation. And we begin to have peace. That's the secret to having peace, is to recognize your problem in light of who God is. And you get perspective. And the other thing that does is it keeps us from making the situation worse when we're afraid. It'll keep you from running around trying to solve stuff. It'll keep you from sending emails that you later regret and spending money that you regret. It'll keep you from saying things that embarrass you later because you're reacting out of fear. Because the proper backdrop for our fear is the goodness and the greatness and the power of God. And David understands this, and I just want to point out that his first line of defense when he is surrounded by enemies is to drop to his knees and to not just pray, although that's a good idea, but to actually worship God in the midst of that. Now here comes the hard part in verse 13. Here's how he ends the psalm. He says, I remain confident of this. I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord. So this idea of wait must be kind of important because David uses it twice in that last verse. He says we're supposed to worship God and then we wait. Actually wait to see what God is going to do. This is a hard one for a lot of us, especially like kind of Western American type Because that sounds like I'm being irresponsible. And I'm not advocating irresponsibility. There may be things for you to do in the situation or in the mess, especially the ones that kind of we make. But before that, before we get around to reacting and fixing and doing, before that, we wait. Because I think what happens a lot of times is when we're afraid, we get ideas that are not, that are counterproductive. And so he's just saying, hang on, before you give your knee-jerk response to the fear, before you just kind of go off and do the impulse thing, is this hard for anybody else? I kind of feel like I have to respond when I'm afraid. Even if I don't know what I'm doing, I should just, I need to be busy, and I need to just look like I'm at least in motion, even if I'm not helping, even if it's the wrong thing. And so the challenge here is once we've turned our perspective off of ourselves and onto God, the challenge, and the hard part for many of us, is to then to wait. To wait for God's voice, to wait for his direction, to let God do what he's going to do. Okay, this is really basic about Christianity, about following Jesus, but it is so important. You realize that we don't trust God. Think about this. We don't trust God because we know what he will do. You have no idea what God's going to do. That's not why we trust God. We trust God because of what he's done and because of what he can do, what he's able to do. That's why we have faith. Not because he's going to give us a roadmap with directions and illustrations about what's to come. And we don't trust God because we know what he will do. And if you're waiting for that, you're going to be waiting for probably a long time. We trust God because he's able. We trust God because he is the only one who is able to rearrange circumstances. He's the only one who's able to put that relationship back together. I mean, ultimately, he is the only one who's able to protect you and me. He's the only one who can bring good out of bad. He's the only one who's able. And when you understand that, then it makes sense that we would place our hope and our trust and our future in him. I think many times what we do is we confuse our inability to control with God's ability. And yes, I'm responsible, and yes, God's given you responsibility, but he has not given us control. And so Psalm 27, David is trying to tell us to fix our gaze on God, and instead of being afraid of all the unknowns and the pile of things that, of what ifs, we need to let it go. And I think for me, sometimes it helps to think about the alternative. You ready for the alternative to this? Because I think this is good, because then you know what your options are, and I want you to be able to make a good choice, okay? If you're not going to trust God, my question to you is, what are you then going to do? Well, I'm going to go with what I know for sure. Okay, let's talk about that. We get so focused on the moment, and we get so focused on what we can see in front of us. And so my question to you, you're wrestling with a decision, and I know it's a great opportunity, and maybe involves like a shady kind of thing, and you got to do a deal with God, like I'll tithe and we'll work it out and whatever. I know it looks like a good deal now, but my question to you is, what about a year from now? I don't know. I know you're in the relationship now because you're afraid of what it might look like to get out of that, but what would happen if you got out a year from now, down the road? But I have no idea. What if you don't panic in your financial trouble and do the kind of short-term fix and end up making things worse? What will happen if you don't react like that down the road? I have no idea. Okay, so we don't know. Everybody, we don't know. So what if you just right now go with God, like his way? Well, short-term, that looks like disaster. Right, I might not fix what I want to fix, and I might not get what I want to get. I might have to let go of something I don't want to let go of. Okay. But are you sure it's going to be a disaster? No. So what you're saying is you don't know either way. Isn't that interesting? When we're afraid, we actually think we know the future. Fear convinces us that we are like prophets. And the reality is we have no idea either way. You really don't know. You have no guarantees. So the question is, perhaps it's a better choice to place our trust in God. And instead of doing the whole thing where it's like, yeah, but I got this thing and this is a really hard situation and I'm going to kind of take a little break and maybe next time, God, I'll come back around, just don't make it so hard, you know. Instead of doing that, maybe the first time, we say, God, I want to place my trust in you. You realize if you put your faith, this is important, if you put your faith in someone or something or some, you know, security or whatever it is, we do that and you cannot predict the future of that for the next 10 minutes. We think we can, but we can't. And we end up turning our back on the only one who is able over something else. And there's no guarantee. So again, we don't trust God because we know what he's going to do. David says, I would rather put my future, my faith, my life into the hands of a God who is able, rather than take my chances with people and what they may or may not do and people who claim to be in control and I know they're really not. I'd rather trust God, not knowing what's going to happen, than trust myself, knowing that I can basically control the next 20 minutes of my life and that's it. And really not even that, if I think about it. So God's waiting for us to place our trust in him. And I want to be clear, he may not come through like we want. Like, things may not work out like we hoped. I'm not saying bad things won't happen, because they will, most likely. But when we do this, we begin to have peace. The problem itself gets reframed with a much bigger perspective. And as we wait, we put ourselves in a position to actually hear from God, to speak into the circumstance. David turns to God. He seeks him. He wants to know God's will. And in verse 11, he says, teach me your way, Lord. And so the last thing I want to say is this. Eventually, there is going to be something after you've worshiped and after you've intentionally waited on God and tried your best to not jump in and fix whatever it is. If you're really seeking God's will, if you're seeking direction from him, there will come a point, and I want to warn you on this, God will give you his direction, but it may not be what you expect. In other words, God may ask you to do some unusual, perhaps even counterintuitive things. And not irresponsible, right? But perhaps unusual, different things that you wouldn't have expected. So you're afraid of losing someone or something, and God's going to say, let go. You're afraid of falling, and God's going to say, I want you to jump. You're afraid of the relationship falling apart, and God's going to say, open your hands. You're afraid of being alone, and God's going to say, I want you just to give up on finding someone for the next 6 months and just see what I do in your heart. See how that's not what you would have picked? But you've got to be in a place of waiting and listening to hear that. You're afraid you're not going to get financially what you want. You're not going to get where you want by a certain time. And God's going to say, see that need over there financially? I want you to be the person to meet that need. That's what God often does. And it's going to be scary, and we're going to say, God, are you sure that's a good idea? And God's going to say, do you trust me? Didn't you ask for my help? And haven't I already begun to give you peace? And God's going to say, now let me do something unusual. And then we sit back and we watch God do what only God can do. So I don't know what God's going to do in your situation with the fear that you're wrestling with now or is just around the corner in your life. I do know that as long as we're focused on the fear, we lose perspective. We're basically dead in the water. And I know that if you ever come to a place in your life, a place in your relationship with God, where you're able to step back and to admit, God, I cannot handle this. I don't know what to do with this. I think your greatest fear, whether that's the fear of the unknown, whether that's fear of having to give something up and what is life going to be like without that thing or that person, I think your greatest fear may be the place where God has the best opportunity to do something amazing in your life. if you'll just step back and say, God, for me, it's fear, and that's all I see. But for you, it's an opportunity. But for that to happen, you've got to keep perspective. Like to focus off of yourself and onto God. You've got to worship him for who he is, what he's done, and what he's able to do. Then you've got to make space to wait. Wait. And then listen for his direction. And then you follow as he leads. And then you just get to watch and see what God does in your life. I want to show a video here. This is actually from Brian Olson's home church in Lincoln. And I basically could have just showed this video and not said any of what I just said. Just a one man's wrestling with trusting God in really difficult, really scary circumstances. So let's watch this, and then we're going to end with a song together that they're going to share with us. So go ahead.
You wouldn't know it by looking at me, but I'm literally dying inside. I had a grandfather. My mom's father, Bill Kropp, was a legendary basketball coach here in Nebraska. I had an uncle, Tom Kropp, play in the NBA, and my father was also a professional basketball player. My whole life was basketball, and all I wanted to do was play in the NBA. In high school, I had a scholarship and an appointment to the United States Air Force Academy to go and play basketball out there. So as a senior in high school, I felt like I had a real plan with the next 5 to 10 years of my life. I was in a movie theater on Christmas Eve night, and I really started to feel pain in my heart, to the point where every beat hurt. Christmas night, we made it all the way back to Bryan Hospital here in Lincoln, and they called in a bunch of physicians and staff into the emergency room, and they said, "Ben, by the looks of things, you've been having a massive heart attack for about a day and a half." From that point on, that plan of 5 to 10 years that I had laid out started to change. I no longer had an appointment to the Air Force Academy because I had been medically disqualified. I could no longer play basketball. So right there, two of my loves that I really felt made me kind of who I was were taken all in one fell swoop. I would jump down a couple steps and a leg would just give out from under me and I'd hit the ground. Something that 6 months before was perfectly normal for somebody my age to do. I went to Mayo Clinic 6 or 8 different times for them to study and try to figure out what was going on. To me, that time in my life was extremely hard because I could feel what was going on in my body, that things weren't right, but yet medicine couldn't give me an answer. At that time, I was newly married to my wife, Tara, and we had just found out that she was pregnant with our first child. I went in and had another muscle biopsy here in Lincoln, and that was when they gave me the official diagnosis of limb girdle muscular dystrophy. And they said, eventually, your heart and lungs are muscles, and they're going to be affected. Your long-term survival looks like it's going to be in the 5 to 6 year range. And I remember calling my dad and breaking down. And then I remember getting home and trying to talk to Tara, who was 7 months pregnant, and explain to her this is what our life may look like. And pleading with God to take it away. I knew that I was a Christian and I went to church on Sunday mornings, but it was a superficial relationship between God and me. truly, it was at that time when we found the Berean Church. And I remember hearing Brian Clark. And a couple times it felt like he was talking directly to me. Like, once you go through something like that, where you don't know if today or next week is your last day, it focuses that relationship with Jesus. And it also clarifies what Jesus did for us. Because we're saved by grace through faith. And that Jesus paid that debt for us, and that he was the one who made that sacrifice, so that all of this is really insignificant in comparison to what that reward is later on. Today, my life doesn't look anything like what I had planned out 15 or 20 years ago. But in certain ways, it's so much better. I get to do a lot of public speaking on dealing with adversity and help middle school kids and high school kids through that time, different groups in the community that are dealing with hard things. Brian talked several times about how going through the wilderness, it can be taken both literally and figuratively. I worry that I won't be able to walk out on the basketball court when Evan's a senior for parents' night. And I worry that I won't be able to walk my daughter down the aisle when she gets married.
Somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly.
So every day when I deal with this struggle, the question is never far from my mind: can I really trust God? To be real honest, I've learned through this that it isn't really a question. It's assured to us. God is there. God cares for us. God walks with us. And when we can no longer stand or we can no longer walk, he will carry us.